Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Swagoo and Perk, a new show led by its namesake host, former NFL veteran and analyst Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins, with new episodes every Tuesday morning. Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey with can't-miss conversations, and welcome in top sports and celebrity guests. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Oh, so much as usual to get to. I'm still mad about last week, though. They didn't drop that Aaron Rodgers right after we finished recording, but
yes,
whatever.
They did. By the way, did you peep how I adjusted my seat just to make sure everybody saw Emmy?
I see her back there.
Oh, dog, whenever I set up, like I do a camera shot and whoever's on the other side is like, yo, can you move this way? I'd be so mad when they made me move in front of Emmy, you know? And for those of you who don't know, I have an Emmy. But the reason this Emmy is so cool is because I did not deserve it. Like that's why, like, I got an Emmy. If I had won an Emmy, it would be like, you know, like, I'd be like, man, keeping that, you know, in a special room and everything else. Nah, baby, I got an Emmy because I executive produced 30 for 30. So the whole series got one. So since I got it, I'm just flexing it on you. Like, that Route 100, I earned that. Although somehow I have not been worthy of 100 since. It's so bizarre. But, you know, Emmy right here.
There she go.
Looking there she sexy. Go. There she go. I just need to let y'all know, man. Your boy Foxworth, I feel like he kind of tried to shade me this morning. I hit him up. I'm like, yo, is there anything you want to talk about? And the thing that's funny is neither of us ever really has an answer. We're like, you want to talk about something? All right, cool. We just pick it out. So, you know, we got there and he was like, he wants to talk about how I'm a Braves fan when it's convenient to me.
I didn't mean it as shade. So I think what happened was you normally send me that text and I'm like, no, we figured it out. I think you were just shocked that I responded to it. Like, and you just didn't know how to take it because I believe that people should do things that are convenient to them. You are a Braves fan when it's convenient. I'm not judging you for it. I'm a Maryland Terrapins fan when it's convenient. If you notice my Twitter history, we get a couple wins early in the season. I'll be tweeting out turtles. Then we go on a mid-season slide and I disappear. And I feel like that's my right. And I think most fans should do this. Like, it's a relationship. You're in a relationship with this team. And if you're in a relationship with somebody and they treating you bad, your mom not going to be like, well, okay, go back and work it out. They're going to change. I am completely fine with it. Yep. It's not like you're their only fan. You are one of millions of fans. And so if they start acting up on you, then you leave them, teach them a lesson. And maybe they do right, you come back. And that's what you did. I'm not mad at you. I guess I could argue, though, that the main reason why you stopped rooting for the Braves hasn't really changed. And now you're back.
Yeah, now here's the thing I realized about it is that you're right. It is a relationship. And my relationship with the Braves is a bit more complex than it is with, honestly, most things, places, and realms in my life. And so what I just kind of like realized about it was, you know, when I had decided to get rid of them, it wasn't because they was losers, right? Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, the Braves just broke my heart so much. No, the Braves brought me primarily joy. I never got to the point where I was like, yo, it gets old winning the National League. It gets old going to the playoffs every year. I ain't never get to that point. That's you greedy. Not you, you, Dominique, but you know, the other ones. Yeah, you know, that's them greedy folk. I was never in that place, but I didn't like what they became. And now they got a bunch of dudes wearing chains. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like we have gone away from what this was before, but then they keep making it complex because the owners have decided that we going to be the Trumpiest team in baseball. And that's not what I stand for. That's not what I represent. And I will say the other thing that's gotten awkward for me. Are you up on the Jock Peterson thing with his pearl chain?
Pearls. Yeah.
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 And like, so I was in Atlanta last week for an event and in the lobby of my hotel, it was like a bull or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he had the pearl chain around his neck. And I get it, right? Jock played it well. The pearls were unique, so he could say that he stands out. But in the end, you know what's going on here. Them chains wasn't nothing that they could wrap their arms around until the white man did it. Like, there really ain't no way around that. You know, like, that's what that came down to. The white dude came out with a chain, and now everybody want his pearl chain as if he got the coldest chain. I know he don't got the coldest chain, because I know he don't care about chains like our brothers from the Dominican do. Influence the baseball, baby.
They have, although I think you're right, they do have a crack of wiggle room in that every team has Dominicans with chains.
Yes.
Not every team got pearls. So, like, that's what makes them unique. That's their crack.
They always got a crack of wiggle room. That's the game.
But hold on. I'm not going to let you get away with this. I started this by legitimately being on your side with your fanhood, but then I started talking myself through it. And the things that made you leave this relationship have not changed. They doubled down on it. So, like, I know about the Braves' move to Cobb County and how that's problematic because of you. And I also know about, hold on. I also know about the tomahawk chop and, like, all that stuff, in part because you bring it up so often.
Yes.
And I do know about the Trumpiness of all of this. They are leaning in and doubling down just because they put some gold chains on the field. You like, all right, fine.
It was not so much about the chains as much as when they was out here trying to be the enforcers and the keepers of the game and everything that was right with baseball. Mm-hmm. That wasn't cracking. They stopped doing that, and they got the dudes that are the opposite of what Brian McCann did not like. Like that's what I'm saying, right? Like, gotcha. Like as an aesthetic. But then they go and do everything else. Yeah. And then for that parade, they smashed the gas through Atlanta. They got to Cobb County early. They was like, yo, we got to get up out of here. We just, you know, and I knew they had a lot of ground to cover, so I was down to cut them some slack for how fast they was blowing through the city of Atlanta. But then they got to Cobb County early. They got a police escort. And I was like, see, here they go again. You know what I'm saying? And then when they finally got out there to White Flight Stadium, Joe Simpson, who's broadcasted for many years, he talked about the people and how they wave towels. He's like, we don't have towels because we got this. And then he started doing a tomahawk chop. And one thing I had noticed during the games is they wasn't playing the drum track anymore, at least that I could hear. Like, people had to do it on their own. Nope, they played the drum track, and then everybody did that chop. And I just sat there like, why y'all keep doing this? Why y'all keep making this so difficult for people? You know what I'm saying? Like, they have branded themselves as a team full of that guy. Except they don't have a team full of that guy. They got dudes like Eddie, and they got dudes like Ronald. You know what I'm saying? Even the white dudes' name are Freddie and Jock.
I think they're trying to play all sides, but publicly do the thing that's going to get what they think, the clientele they want. But just as a parade / party planning, I understand there's stadiums out there, but you're going the wrong way. You want to end in Atlanta.
They don't want to end in Atlanta.
Well, if I want to have a good time, I want to end in Atlanta. I will start out in Cobb County. The Falcons training facility was in Flowery Branch. And had the Falcons won a Super Bowl, we can start it out there. But you know where we're going to end it? We're going to end it in the heart of the city. And Antoine Patton and whoever else is performing is going to be there, and it's going to transition right on in to the nightcap. Magic damn city. Like, you win a Super Bowl in Atlanta or a championship in Atlanta, that's how you plan the parade.
You're going to have a Super Bowl parade that started at 2:00 in the afternoon so that it can end that night.
What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that? I won a Super Bowl. 2:00, there's sunlight. You can get all the pictures you want. The kids can be out there. School let out at 3:00. The kids can be out there. Right now, you asking the kids to skip school. So I won a 2:00 parade. The kids can come out 4:00 before they go home. Go right on at home. You get off of work. You ain't even got to skip work. We keep this productivity rolling. You can come out after work and do it. And we see you at happy hour. We're going to roll this right into 10:00. Magic City Mondays.
Let me tell you this about the parade, though, boy. It ties into something else, just generally Atlanta, which is pandemic. What pandemic are you talking about? I got off the elevator in my hotel. It's one of them hotels where you go to the ground floor and then you take the elevator up to the lobby. I get off the elevator, and it's a pretty cool little lobby bar, pretty sizable. It is deep. Apparently, somebody was having a mixer. And let me tell you who had a mask on. me. Like, I Atlanta so wild with it, and this to me is the test. It's partially about the people in there, but the real test about whether y'all got a pandemic going is whether the employees got one off. And the employees didn't. And I'm like, yo, don't you care about yourself? Like, you're not terrified right now? The person at the front desk, all that, they were mask free. That part threw me off. So I was looking at that parade. Like, I was like, oh, you gonna go to the parade? Nah, I don't think I want to be surrounded by the people under those circumstances.
I ain't been down to Atlanta or anywhere that far south in a while. Like, I'm in New York and D.C. D.C. is as far south as I've been since this all started. So, like, Jeff Saturday and I work together on Wednesdays, and I know him for a long time. Love him. Great guy. He is from Atlanta, like, really Atlanta. But now he got money and he no longer lives in Atlanta. But either way, he's from down there and I see him every Wednesday and we always have a good chuckle about the difference in how the pandemic is treated in New York and where he's from. Cause he like, oh, the first time he's like, oh, everybody got masks. He's not like, he's fine with it. He put his mask on. He just like, I ain't used to this. I ain't had a mask in forever. So yeah, it's wild down there.
Yo, well, not wearing the mask is kind of a contagious thing. Cause you walk in, you know, like I walk in the lobby and I see my man's there. He was there for the same event. And I'm the one person with the mask. And you almost feel like you're being rude, right? Because our society, showing your face is part of interaction. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so then you wind up feeling like you the jerk, right? You like you need one more person with you that's on board, right? Like while I was there with them, we started talking to some other folks and they had masks on because like one of them worked for the CDC, one of them was a doctor, and like the other one was married to him. You know what I'm saying? So they were masked up and I saw them and I was like, cool, wow, let's put this thing on, you know? Like, exactly. Like, cool, I'm not violating or whatever it is. No, Atlanta were different in that regard from this New York thing because it's, you know, it's masks on the street still here.
Oh, yeah.
Atlanta ain't going for that, not even a little bit.
And the employee's point is right because even when you go to restaurants in New York, they do the vaccine check, so everybody who's patronizing the restaurant has their mask off. They're eating and drinking and you don't see anybody in a mask. The servers, the hostess, everybody. You can't see nothing but eyes in restaurants or in when you go shopping everywhere. It's just eyes. And them people are not playing those games. But it ain't like that elsewhere.
Nah, man, the clientele want it. Like, that's the other part. Like, for me personally, please put your mask on.
Yeah.
Garçon.
Right. I'm with you. And I put my mask on when I like if I go to a restaurant, I walk in, put my mask on. I don't take it off until the food comes and I need to go to the bathroom. I put it on when I'm going to the bathroom. And like it's probably just more performative than anything. I'm not sure that I'm at any risk, but it's in my pocket. It ain't hurting nobody. The employees got their mask on. I'm walking past 10 tables. Let's say I get hit with a sneeze or a cough. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't know. Or someone else is sneezing or coughing. Like honestly, at this point, I feel like I wear my mask. And I know it's supposed to protect both sides, but I wear my mask as like a symbol of respect.
Yes.
I ain't playing these games. And I feel like it's the opposite down south where it's like you're the one person with the mask on that just flew in from New York. You are sending them a message that says I don't respect you or believe what you believe. And they might take it as offense, but you don't care.
Nah, man. They just never got started down there. You know what I mean? Like they shut down for like a couple weeks or something like that. And then after that, they was like, yo, man, we got to get back at it. And then they go from there. Because look, man, you know, Atlanta, Air City got its thing that it got. And Atlanta got strip clubs. And I am amazed. They still going. I'm like, oh, no, man. This is a bridge too far, dog.
Yeah. I mean, everybody got to make sacrifices. You got to give up some things that are really important.
I do wonder this, though. So if you were an exotic dancer, would you wear your mask while you did your job? And the answer is, depends on who you are.
Exactly.
Some people might have a whole new world here, right? Because look, we get you on the floor, everybody working with something a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like football. Right. So you got speed receivers, you got possession receivers, you know? Some people there because of their hands, some people there because they can block, whatever it is. There's different ways to do it. And for some of them, this might have unlocked their true potential because people is no longer going to be focusing on their weaknesses.
I don't got to run no slants or hitches no more. We all goes nine
routes. Yes. Think about what I can do. Think about what I am.
On that Belichick. Let me get some fake eyelashes and get caked up.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, some people are here because they're hard workers. Like, not everybody's a five-star. Right? But in the end, you could turn into an all pro.
Nothing wrong with that.
Focusing on your strengths.
Now you got me thinking like how we have built up this whole industry of sports media around athletes. Like you can have that industry around everything. Like I just, any line of work, there could be First Take for dancers, just talking about people's performance. Like, there actually might be a market for that in Atlanta, the only city in America where it is truly competitive and these people are actually athletes. Maybe it's not the only city, Houston maybe also, but like, if you ever been in those places, them people are real live athletes.
Yeah, no. Like, not like that was the thing. You saw the story about the pole assassin, right?
Oh yeah.
Pole assassin got core strength.
Yeah.
Like that, like no, Atlanta, not everybody is doing it the same way. In Atlanta, there's a whole lot of daddies in Atlanta, like, so that's what I got out of these gymnastics lessons, huh? Yep, this is exactly it. This is what it turned into. But she drive a real nice car. What you wanted. You know, Chris Rock had that whole thing about being a dad. It's like, your job is to keep off the pole. Yeah, but job one is to get her off your couch, right? Like, job one is for you to be able to pay your own bills and take care of yourselves. And job one, accomplished.
Yeah, I mean, the world is changing. Our perception of all that stuff is changing. I'm slower to change that, but I think that, like, sex work in general is, like, I mean, it's something that is to be respected. It's a career path. It's something, way to make money. If you feel empowered by doing that, it's no judgment in it. But I do think that people who, like, the idea of strip clubs is like what you see on TV, and TV is primarily like white culture and stuff like that. And the idea of that is like someone slowly, slinkily moving around to some Guns N' Roses or something. I don't know, but I think that's somewhat changing. But there are real, like, I mean, the same way that dance is competitive and can be considered sport-like, like, it's the same thing. Like, the level of athleticism, I've seen people do things in there that, at the peak of my core strength, I could never imagine doing.
Because the thing that people don't realize, and part of why I got no problem talking about it so matter-of-factly, is that Atlanta used strip clubs to make itself a destination for, like, conventions, for business conferences. Like, this was part of the plan. That's why the rules and laws are so liberal about that stuff. And why the ball game was, if our strip club game is strong, then these people, when they got their conference, they gonna come down here and rock with us, right? Like, right. That's a big part of why they're there. And I will tell you, going to college in Atlanta, it could have got me fired leaving there, because I just didn't realize that people weren't so casual about the strip club as they were in Atlanta, right? Because it's just okay. So, like, the idea of people having, like, business lunches and stuff like that in strip club in Atlanta, that's not some far off crazy thought, right? Yeah. Like, yo, we gonna go to the strip club. That's not wild. You be reading these stories, man. That stuff be getting people fired, dog.
Yeah. I never liked strip clubs. Like, I think strip clubs always seem like a good idea to me when you're sitting around with your guys. Then eventually you get there and, like, the first few minutes, like, cool. That at some point, I just get sad. You don't have that experience in Atlanta. And when I got traded down to the Falcons, it was the first time I went. I didn't become, like, a regular. I still didn't love going to them because it just wasn't culturally a part of my life. And it was never something that I particularly enjoyed. But the sadness, frankly, that I felt going to other strip clubs, where it just felt like, oh, man, you don't want to be here. Just make you feel uncomfortable. You go to Atlanta, it's different. It's a lot more like you are going to a performance. And it's not like, in the same way that Drake, you go to a Drake concert, Drake is performing for you. You also recognize that he's the man in there, where it's very different, I feel like, in other strip clubs in the country, even black strip clubs at other places. You go in there and the clientele is like the boss is in charge, and like the women are like coming up to you and trying to like convince you. And it feels very like, I don't know, I don't want to judge people, but like to me, it felt transactional and gross. And when you go into there, those big ones, they are very much the stars. And you walk in and it's like, it doesn't feel like they don't want to be doing it. It feels like it's something. Yes. And I mean, it's all mushy stuff that I can't speak to. But just to give people, I don't know how many people who listen to your show don't know much about Atlanta strip clubs, but to give my idea what it's like, that's what it's like.
It's like the difference between going to a casino in Las Vegas and going to a casino in other places. Like, casinos are only in this country. Casinos are really only fun in Las Vegas and like a handful of, not even other cities, just a handful, like Seminole Hard Rock in Fort Lauderdale. That's a fun one. You go to a casino in like Indiana, it's like going to a strip club in Indiana and it don't feel good.
Have you ever been to the casino in Detroit?
I have not. I've not been to Detroit.
Well, don't. My first casino experience was when Champ took me to Vegas as a rookie. So that was my first experience with casino. And so from then on, I was like, oh, I like casinos. I didn't know I like casinos. So then there's some in Colorado that are a little bit out from the city. And I was like, let me go to this casino. It'll be fun. Took my girlfriend at the time. I was like, let's go. It'll be fun. It was miserable. It was like all old people smoking. It was terrible. I was like, oh, that's just a bad casino. We landed in Detroit to play the Lions a couple of years later. And some guys like, let's go to casino. I went to casino. It was depressing. Vegas is the only place that you can, I mean, for me, only place I can go to casino and enjoy myself and not end up feeling sad.
Yeah, Vegas, exactly. Like going to Vegas and going to the casino is like going to the bar, hang out, have a drink. People are talking. Going to casino and the other places is like drinking outside of the liquor store. Like you're doing the same thing you was doing at the other place, right? Like in fact, you might be doing it for cheaper outside the liquor store, but the people who will be there with you as you drink outside the liquor store, this is not a celebration. This is not a party. They are not here to let loose. They are here to get numb. Like I was at the Horseshoe in Hammond, Indiana, I was there sitting at a table. I forget what I was playing, but I played a little, probably blackjack, playing a little something. And I just looked at the sadness in that lady that was next to me. It was just like, I'm just getting off work and I'm here to give you my paycheck. Here, you can have it.
The desperation, man, is tough. It's like the addiction to the stuff and the desperation is really tough to deal with. In Vegas, you would think Vegas is like a gambling capital, which it is, but the pros are in there, but they're in different places than you're in. So like you can sit down at a blackjack table and play wrong in Vegas and like people will laugh with you and have a good time. Go to one of these other places where people got their mortgage on the table. They got their rent on the table. They got their food money on the table. Go ahead and hit when you're not supposed to hit. That is depressing. And I mean,
that's so real. That's by the way, that's how you know how rigged, not even rigged, but what the odds are on the game. The fact that the dealer will tell you, I think that's a bad idea. When have you ever been in a competition and you've been willing to do that? Never. So you know what this is? Not a competition. They are so sure that in the end, they are going to win that they will tell you the optimal strategies.
They want you to have a good time. They out here calling. They are not arguing in the pickup game. It's like, I found you there. Your ball.
No, they're like, don't worry. You're going to pay your fee. Like by the time this is all said and done, they not greedy. You know what I'm saying? They not greedy. That's really nice of them. Because if I ran the casino, it would be like no advice.
Yeah, they want you to come back. That's very smart. Like they want to hit you for $10 this time. And they want to hit you for $10 a month for the rest of your life. I, on the other hand, try to head crack you for $100 and hope you never come back.
Yeah. Like throw that spade down when you still got a club in your hand in spades and see if anybody at that table is going to be like, wait a minute, you know, you're not allowed to do that. No, sorry, Bob.
Gonna come get you.
Man. Not happening.
All right. Odell Beckham got himself to the Rams. Good job, him.
It was actually interesting that when the stuff came out after he left, there wasn't the giant info dump that I expected to like slam him on the way out. It seemed a lot of, hey, it just didn't work on either side, right? Like he and Baker were not the right people. They said Odell was out there running his own routes. And I don't know enough about that world to speak on whether that was happening or what a problem that may have caused or anything else. But Baker went out there and they're like, see, he was better with Odell Beckham. If I'm not mistaken, outside of that one pass that he threw to Donovan Peoples-Jones,
he ain't do nothing.
He threw something like 50 yards to wide receivers.
Yeah, he ain't do nothing special. Like the defense scored before they even got on the field and dominated that game. And they ran the hell out the ball. Like everybody is good when your defense is scoring touchdowns and your running back is going for 70 yards touchdown runs. Like, yeah, hit a couple passes here or there, a couple low pressure tosses. Like it's a different story. But one of the things I was thinking about with the Odell thing is everyone thinks they're better without Odell Beckham on the roster. And like the numbers support it. I'm fine with them moving on from Odell, but I was wondering, and I guess the Cincinnati game would undercut this, but I was wondering how Odell moving on impacts the locker room psychologically, because I understand everyone looks at what they see on the field, but Odell Beckham is a cult of personality. Like Odell Beckham is a real deal celebrity. Everyone knew who he was before he got there. And he has a college teammate on the team. So I guess in my mind, it was just a like completely unfounded on anything, but just a thought is like, there's a chance that there's a contingent in the locker room that is Team Odell.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so there is a chance that this backfires on that team. It doesn't seem like that's the case one game in, and I have no reason to believe that it will. But it was something that I was thinking about the whole time is just because he ain't put up these numbers don't mean he don't got a crew. It don't mean he's not a leader. And you send him away.
Dog, they said... Because actually, I am interested in the fact that I haven't heard much from Jarvis Landry on this, because that's not just his college homie. That's his homie, you know? Right. But they said that Odell, beginning of the year, invite everybody out to the crib like it does that, and was telling the young boys that they could take whatever clothes or shoes they wanted out of his closet. Number one, flex. Flex, right? He's like, even if it's my favorite one, baby, I'll wear stuff twice, right? Flex.
Odell is Vegas in this situation. Like, I don't care. Take a little bit.
Yo, and I bet the rookies be in there like, you know how you don't want to be the first person when they say the food ready? Right? Like, you don't want to be the first person. There is one rookie in there that was like, nah, man, I ain't trying. There was another one that was like, as soon as after everybody left, hey, Odell, I think I left my wallet there. Can I come back and look? And then come back, and that dude got a moving box. You know what I'm saying? God. And he just out there like, hey, you said you were in 11, right? Me too. All right.
That is a hell of a flex, man. Just take what you want. This man is inviting people to steal from him and don't even care. Yeah.
But to your point, yes, there is an Odell squad because there was always a T.O. squad, right? Yeah. Like the problem with T.O., wasn't that everybody hated him. It was that some people hated him and some people loved him. And that's polarizing, right? If everybody's on team you, then everything works out a little bit different. And so I will be interested in seeing it because here's the other part too. You and I kind of feel the same about Mayfield. I don't need to slam him, but I don't think he's remarkable in any way. Like nobody can point to it and people want it to be so bad, but there's nothing to indicate that he is at all remarkable. And if you and I from here are like that dude ain't remarkable, it's somebody on that team that think he a bum, right? Yeah. There's dudes out there that's like, man, he's sorry. If Scottie Pippen can spend all this time trying to explain to us, basically Michael Jordan, I mean, I ain't saying he ain't good, but you know, like,
yeah, we all assume that everyone sees things the same way, but depending on where you stand and things look different. Inside that locker room, Baker looks different. And I don't know if it makes him look a little shinier or make him look a little dustier to those guys. It may be different depending on the guy. But like, I know I was never a great player in the league. Like I had great seasons and great games, but I was never like a great player. But even I, in the locker room, at times, looking at players that were much better than me, and looking at them like, man... If this dude do this one more time, because you're so close to it. And I also know, like, at some times people are looking at me like, man, this boy better get it together. And your perception, like the dissonance between what's actually happening and how you feel is happening, like this ties to Aaron Rodgers and just like, in general, how hard it is to admit you are wrong. It's so hard to be honest with yourself in that situation. So you're in that locker room. Your perspective is not the same as my perspective because I'm not in there. So the assumption is being closer to someone makes you like them more. Not true.
Depends.
Yeah, it all depends.
Been there. All depends. Exactly. All depends, right? You know what I think is interesting? For someone to be as famous as Odell Beckham is, and it's so polarized. Like, I was even watching today, like Jeremy Fowler was talking about where he's going to sign, and the phrasing he used was interesting on Get Up, where he was like, Odell has the power here. He's a free agent, right? The need to use that phrasing, again, gets to the place where Odell is kind of perpetually seen as a threat to people. But you think about it, man, he don't really be doing a whole lot of interviews. I don't really know what his voice sounds like. Like, I'm not an Instagram type and in that space, right? So I don't traffic in where celebrity is really cultivated at this point. But I don't find him to be the, hey, look at me guy that I think a lot of people want to make it out to be. He was out there blocking for the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, Odell is not that guy. I think you hit on this last time we talked about Odell is you can't help but look at him. He's not, hey, look at me, but everyone looks at him. His behavior is not unique amongst players of his class. Like, if anything, considering when he was in New York and was the best receiver in the league, the amount of exposure that you got of Odell was limited. And the stuff that we point back to as being a problem was like the man went on a trip and took off his shirt and took a picture with his boys on a boat before a playoff game. Like that's the negative thing. The other stuff is he fought a man on the field because he was so enraged by what was happening. He knocked down the kicking net and then proposed to a kicking net. Like That is mild, mild stuff compared to the way that they're paying them.
And it was a long time ago.
Yeah. Because when we're having these conversations, I try to be delicate with like my colleagues when I'm doing this, but like on Get Up, I'm David Pollack. And he was saying, you don't want to put Odell in New England with a rookie quarterback. And I was like, why not? You know, like it just seemed like there is a kind of a prototype of this diva receiver that we have assigned to Odell based on some very minor infractions from a long time ago and him having bright hair and him being handsomer than all of you. Like, just like that's what it feels like it's tied to me. Cause it's like, what evidence do we have? The exception of his daddy sending this out. I don't know that we have any evidence of him being a problem in a locker room.
Nah. Speaking of family, the Jokic brothers.
Ooh-wee.
So for those of you, you must have seen this, but Jokic had enough of the Morris twin who hit him. And by the way, right, I ain't saying that the Morris twins ain't tougher than me, but I am saying I feel like they get a lot of tough points, and I don't know exactly why.
I don't know. I mean, they told that story to you. That's one reason that stands out.
Yeah. No, they did have that thing where they got into that fight, in college over the woman. And then they were acquitted for this, which amazes me. But that time that they allegedly jumped into Rolls Royce Phantom and went and stomped out, they play daddy because they found out that they play daddy was playing with mama. Someone had seen a text message and then they rolled out. And I still don't know if they were identified as being 2 6'9" dudes in a Rolls Royce Phantom in Phoenix. I'm trying to figure out who the other 6'9" black dudes in Phoenix with the Rolls Royce Phantoms are, but they were acquitted. Okay. It went that way, but they get all these tough points. Again, I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Yeah. I'm not saying they soft. I'm just not exactly sure why everybody feels this way about them. Now the Jokic brothers, apparently one of them in his spare time does the MMA. Another one, he played ball at the University of Detroit Mercy, which meant that he had to spend some actual Detroit time because who else you think is on that team and where you going to be going to hoop? And then there's the other Jokic. And the one thing they all have in common is they from over there. I don't know. I don't know what they was doing over there. I don't know where they was staying over there. I talked to one of my homeboys who spent some time over there. And he's like, nah, it's a little real. Over there, what they talking about, these boys say after what happened with the Heat, the Jokic brothers have bought tickets to the game on November 29th in Miami with the Heat.
They can't let them in the arena. I'm sorry. I'm not for these type of bands. Like, they've done nothing wrong. But it just, to me, seems like a bad idea. Yeah, it seems like a bad idea to have them in there. I've heard stories about the brothers. And from being over there, that part, as far as toughness is concerned, America is a wonderful country, man. It's terrible in many ways, but like the exposure to the level of corruption and poverty and desperation that are in some countries, like
civil war. Wasn't that long ago over there?
Yeah. It's just you walk into school and there's brah, da, 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 da. And it's just like you don't stop walking. Yeah. And it's like rubble from bombs that were dropped a couple weeks ago. Like, I'm basing this off of documentaries because I ain't never been there and I don't never want to go. Like, I haven't been to Brazil and like favelas and stuff like that, which is not over there. But like just understanding that there are levels to all of this, and America's floor is low and embarrassingly low in some places. But it ain't low as it is in some of these other places.
Like the most important factor to winning a fight is not being afraid of losing a fight. Right. Yeah. Like the person that's not afraid has a big, big advantage in the fight. Right. And so, like, I don't know how many people you know from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. They not all gangsters.
Right.
None of them are scared. Right. Yeah. Like, I think about my friends from New Orleans who are college professors, who are guidance counselors, who are seventh grade teachers. Like, no matter who it is, none of them are scared. Why? If you walking around New Orleans scared, you done. That's it. Like I say, Peyton Manning might even be not scared and we don't realize. Everybody I know from New Orleans is not scared because they come from New Orleans and that's just kind of what's required, right? It's got to be like that over there, right?
Of course. I think that there's also like a cultural element. So like culture in general is kind of like the accepted behaviors and activities. It's like a good way for me, at least, to understand what culture is in an organization or a company or whatever. It's like the things that are accepted and expected of you and things that you're comfortable with. So like you'll go somewhere and people will eat something that you're just like, oh, that's outrageous. But like culturally for them, that's fine. My brother travels a whole bunch. And he said that they tried to give him some monkey brain somewhere he went. And he didn't want to be rude, but he was like, that was their culture. And he said, had they not served it in a skull, he might have tried it. But over there, that's how you do it. It's comfortable, you know, like it's whatever. Like I remember when I was a kid, the idea of eating raw fish, outrageous. But all of a sudden, sushi caught on in America. And now I love it. So like, I think about that in the respect when we talk about people from places like this, where it's like, there are things that they had to do, things that they had to see, and it's just culturally accepted. So like when you are in, and I think that explains a lot of people's behavior, is like the expectation. And now I'm not talking about them specifically, but there are people that I know where the expectation is somebody in your crew, if not everybody in your crew, has committed some really, really violent crimes. Let's just put it that way. And so then it's so much easier for people in that crew to be like, oh no, that's what you do, you know? So like, I think that's the part that makes me concerned about measuring the toughness of people from over there, because like what we think is tough, they think is like Tuesday. Like, it's not fair for me to categorize all of them like that, but like culturally, it's fair to say that if you grow up in a war-torn place, like you are a little bit more comfortable with
they've seen some things. That would be the way to put it. Yo, exactly. Speaking of seeing things, did I tell you who I'm going to go see today?
Who that?
So today we are shooting Back on the Record with Bob Costas. You check that out, 11 o'clock Eastern on HBO, following Real Time with Bill Maher. And your man, Jera, is going to be a guest. So I am going to meet Jerry for the first time. And just so you understand how things work, this studio that we're shooting at, unlike the other studio we have, they got rooms for people to like their own little hangout, chill out rooms. You know what I mean? And I was walking to my chill out room. And so I walk and I see Bob Costas' chill out room. And then I see what I think is my chill out room. And they all like decorated, like they definitely call somebody in to do this. Now, that's not always a guarantee, by the way, just so you guys know, at these studios, you'd be amazed how much old, decrepit stuff is in studios. They don't do a lot of freshening up at these places. And so I walk past this one room. It's got this fly couch set up and the whole nine. And I'm like, cool, I'm walking. Nah, that was Jerry's. That was Jerry's. And so we get to the end of the room hallway where we get to my room. And it does have a chair, but there will be no putting my feet up. That was reserved for Jerry.
It's a hierarchy, baby. You'll love Jerry. If you guys have like some time to hang out before or after, like, I mean, it's obvious, it goes without saying, anyone who is as popular as he is, the dude got Bill Clinton level charisma, where like you hang out with him, you'll love him no matter what you believe he stands for. Like, he's got a hell of a memory. I ran into him at a Super Bowl and he just randomly, he stopped, talked to me for 15 minutes, remembered everything there is to remember about me and made me laugh and moved on. Like, he going to hit you with that. He'll win you over. You're going to be a Jera fan.
You got to remember, too, with me and Jerry, and this is the difference between where you and I grew up, right? Where you grew up on the East Coast and I grew up in Texas. Cats like him are so very familiar to me, right? Like, I almost have, there's a certain, as long as they're not like being jerks and trying to like withhold my rights and stuff actively, there's a certain nostalgia I can get with coming across a Jerry Jones type. Like, I know exactly how that dude is wired and what his get down is, you know? And look, this man made his money. How do you make your money, Jerry? I go dig holes in the ground and spend a lot of money to do it and hope it's oil in there.
Yep. I mean, humble's not the word. But like, I think he has a reasonable grasp on his place in the world. And he also doesn't take himself too seriously. And he loves people. So like, if you pop up in Jerry's chill out room and just introduce yourself, he's not going to let you leave. You'd be like, oh, yeah, Bomani Jones. Like, yeah, I grew up in Houston part of the time. He goes, like, oh, you ain't going nowhere. Jerry going to get, he going to regale you with all types of stories. You meet him two times, he might invite you on his bus.
I ain't gonna lie. If he invited me on the bus, I'm going. Like, I don't even know how ethical it is, whatever it is, whatever. I'm going. I don't even drink, but I'll drink that Blue Label.
So we, through negotiations, like, we would see each other, like, for 4 days at a time for several months in a row. So he invited me on the bus several times. That was an ethical situation where I was like, man, I can't do this. I wanted to so bad.
You'd have to quit the union. Yeah, if you had gotten on the bus under them circumstances and then came back, yo, Dominique, where you been, man? I was just hanging out with Jerry. That
you
thing
can come
so silent.
I need to hit him up. Like, remember that bus invite? You said we was going to go on the private jet to Vegas. What's up? Let's do it, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Fosworth. Check him out, undefeated.com. Check him out on Debatable. Check him out on Get Up. Just check him out all over the place. My man, greatly appreciate it as always.
Oh, it was great. I won't tell anybody what we do, Jerry. Just give me a call.
And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.